Hello and welcome along to F1 Rewind, the podcast where we delve into the Formula One archives to bring you the stories and events which happened on each day in motorsport history. Hello everybody and welcome back for one last slice of F1 history before the brand new season commences. As one new season begins, this series of F1 Rewind is coming to a close. But before I depart for a few months, I've got one more delve into the Formula One archives for you, and today's show is all about the 6th of March. It's the day on which the first periodic table of elements was presented in 1869, the day that aspirin was patented in 1899, and the day on which the world's oldest message in a bottle was found in Western Australia in 2018. It's also the day that Mario Andretti took his first F1 win in 1971, the day that the first Canadian to attempt to qualify for a round of the championship died in 1981, and the day on which the Braun GP team was founded in 2009. But before we get into all of that, back to the message in the bottle. And as we started this series of the podcast with a nautical theme, it seems right that we end it with one too. It was on this day 2 years ago that a family from Perth found the oldest message in a bottle thrown from German ship Paula on the 12th of June 1886. The ship had been travelling from Cardiff in Wales to Indonesia, and experts say that the bottle was probably washed up on shore within 12 months of the voyage before being buried by sand. What did the message say? Well, the finder was asked to give details on the back of the note, outlining where and when it was found, and then return the note to the nearest German embassy. It was part of a 69-year experiment in which thousands of bottles had been thrown from German ships. According to the BBC, 662 messages, but no bottles, had been found up to that point. Also, while I'm at it, there was a loosely F1-related story in the news on this day in 1974, as an unnamed Italian industrialist lost a record $1.92 million at roulette over 5 hours in Monte Carlo's famous casino. Anyway, on with today's actual F1 stories. Here are all the tales from motorsport history from the 6th of March. First up on today's list of birthdays is Bill Schindler, who was born on this day in 1909 in Middletown, New York. If you cast your mind back a couple of weeks, we were talking about Cal Nadir, who was one of three drivers to compete in the Indianapolis 500 with a prosthetic leg. Well, Schindler is another one of those drivers. He lost his left leg competing in a Champ Car race in 1935. The only World Championship Formula One races which Schindler raced in were Indianapolis 500 races in 1950, 1951 and 1952. He started fourth on his debut at the event, but his final appearance in 1952 is the only time that he reached the end of the race, finishing in 20th. Schindler was killed just 3 months after his last Indy 500 appearance, after crashing while leading a sprint car race in Pennsylvania. Oswald Karch was born on the 6th of March 1917. Karch raced in both East and West Germany in the 1950s. He took part in the 1953 German Grand Prix when the championship was run to Formula 2 regulations. He missed qualifying for the event and started second to last in the 35-car field. After running near the back, Karch retired after 10 laps with a blown engine. He went on to race in sports cars in the following year and retired from racing soon after. He died at the age of 91 in January 2009. Piero Carini was born on this day in 1921. The Italian racer was invited to drive for Scuderia Mazzotto in a Ferrari 166 in 1952. He took part in the French and German Grand Prix, but retired from both races. Despite racing only 3 laps as a result of his retirements, Ferrari signed Carini to their works team for 1953, effectively as a junior driver. He took part only in one race that year, the season-ending Italian Grand Prix, where he would once again retire. It would be his last F1 appearance, as he moved to Alfa Romeo in 1954 and drove touring cars, winning at the famous Mille Miglia, among other events. Carini died in a sports car race in France in 1957. South Africa's Willie Ferguson was born on this day in 1940. Born in Johannesburg, Ferguson's only F1 appearance came at the 1972 South African Grand Prix, where he entered a Brabham BT33 with Team Gunston. But he never raced. The car's engine blew in practice, and he was left unable to participate. He was penciled in to drive a Surtees car for the team, but that car was raced by John Love for the Mother's Pride. Aside from appearances in non-championship races, Ferguson was also a regular in sports car racing, competing from 1960 until 1972. He died from cancer in 2007. Another birthday today is Jackie Stewart's brother Jimmy, who was born in 1931. If you want to hear more about Jimmy, check out the first episode of F1 Rewind from the 3rd of January. And, in case you were wondering, all of these drivers share their birthday with Michelangelo, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, and David Gilmour. Jimmy Stewart died on the 3rd of January, and the only former driver to have died on the 6th of March was born on the 3rd of January. Alan Heath died on this day in 1981 at the age of 63. Heath was the first Canadian driver to attempt to qualify for a round of the Drivers' Championship and entered the Indianapolis 500 twice in 1952 and 1953, but he failed to qualify on either occasion. Prior to his failed Indy attempts, Heath raced in midget cars and had a highly successful time, winning 31 races in 1946 and 50 in 1947. Heath had a big crash at the Ileana Speedway in 1953, breaking multiple bones and requiring his left hand to be amputated. Impressively, he returned to racing less than a year later and won on his comeback. Heath died of a heart attack on this day in 1981. Three Formula One races have taken place on the 6th of March. Last week, we celebrated Mario Andretti's birthday, and today marks the 49th anniversary of his maiden Formula One victory. His win at the 1971 South African Grand Prix made him the first person in history to win the Daytona 500, the Indianapolis 500, and an F1 race. Andretti started fourth on the grid and finished 20 seconds ahead of pole sitter Jackie Stewart. This turned out to be Andretti's only win with Ferrari. Stewart scored the first podium for Tyrrell's own car, having previously finished in the top three with Mark's chassis. Another South African race to have taken place on this day was the 1976 Kyalami race, won by Niki Lauda. It was Lauda's third win in succession, and he extended his early championship lead in the dramatic 1976 title fight. Title rival James Hunt had started on pole, but had dropped to fourth by the first corner. Hunt eventually finished as runner-up in the race. Also in this race, Gunnar Nilsson made his first appearance, James Hunt scored his 10th podium finish, and Ferrari celebrated their 60th victory. It was almost 30 years before another race was held on this day. The 2005 Australian Grand Prix took place on this day at Albert Park. In the race, Thiago Monteiro, Naren Karthikeyan, Patrick Friesacher and Christian Albers all made their debuts, as did the Red Bull team, who impressed and scored points, with David Coulthard finishing in fourth place. The race was won by Giancarlo Fisichella, who had started from pole position. Meanwhile, BAR found a loophole in the rules and got their drivers to pull into the pits at the end of the race, therefore exempting themselves from the new rule where drivers could use only one engine per two races. By pulling into the pits, the BAR cars could replace their engines without any penalty for the next race. The regulations were changed for the next race, and drivers had to have a genuine technical problem in order to be entitled to a new engine without taking a penalty. Talking of Albert Park, there's just 1 week left until the opening race of the season, and Melbourne has appeared in the news quite a lot on this day in history. As I said last week, the Australian Grand Prix moving to Melbourne was a thorny topic for some locals back in 1996. And on this day in 1996, 13 people broke through the track's fences to stage a protest. A spokesperson said they did it to tell the drivers and teams, who had just arrived for the race in the coming days, that they were not welcome. They even threatened to stage a major international incident ahead of the race, which these days would likely get you arrested on the spot. One year later, in 1997, Victoria's Public Transport Union voted to go on strike over the race weekend, causing chaos for fans visiting the Australian Grand Prix. Ron Walker said that the strike would cost taxpayers millions of dollars. He said, "It's the biggest event in Australia's history, the biggest corporate event in the world, and the unions have gone on strike in a very selfish way." Next in Albert Park headlines, how about a night race in Melbourne? That was in the news on this day in 2015, with Bernie Eccleston, Lewis Hamilton, Daniel Ricciardo and Christian Horner all in support of the idea. Making the race a floodlit affair would have its benefits, including being on at a more social time of day in Europe. Sadly, the state government have always ruled the idea out, and it's never progressed any further than being approved by figures within the sport. And last in today's Albert Park news, also on this day in 2015, organisers denied that the race would be boycotted over safety concerns. What had caused those alleged safety concerns? It was Fernando Alonso's mysterious crash in pre-season testing, which saw him have to be airlifted to hospital and miss the first race of the season. In the end, the race, unsurprisingly, went ahead. A number of safety changes were being discussed on this day in 2001, following a crash at the Australian Grand Prix which led to the death of Marshal Graham Beveridge. Beveridge had been killed after being struck by a tyre from Jacques Villeneuve's BAR car following a collision with Ralf Schumacher. The cars had been quicker than anticipated in Melbourne, and Max Mosley said the sport had to act quickly if the turn of speed continued in the following races. One of the ideas suggested was to raise the height of safety fences, therefore better protecting marshals and fans. 2 years later, Jacques was concerned by the new compulsory hands device, saying there would be some situations where you could get hurt by the device, and that it would not have saved any driver in the last 9 years, and that it would have killed Pedro Diniz at the 1999 European Grand Prix. The hands device has now been in use in F1 for 17 years, and has not killed anyone. And Jacques hasn't been the only driver complaining about F1 being a little bit more safe than it used to be. On this day in 2008, Eddie Irvine compared Formula One to tiddlywinks. Speaking to The Guardian, he berated the FIA for dumbing down F1 to the point that it was no longer a sport, but merely a game. He said that ramping up safety should not be the primary focus of the FIA, saying that it is now nearly impossible to have an accident in Formula One. And, of course, the 2008 season is notable for there not being a single accident in the entire season. On this day in 1997, Damon Hill lost his seat. Nope, he wasn't fired. The Arrows team literally lost his seat. The team had somehow misplaced it. Arrows technical director Frank Durney said,
"It's one of the most important parts. We are not too sure where it is. Damon cannot race without one, that's for sure."
And that wasn't the only time that a team was missing pieces on this day in history. With 72 hours to go until the 2000 Australian Grand Prix, Arrows, Benetton and BAR were missing their cars due to Cyclone Steve. Yes, Cyclone Steve, which had caused the flight containing their freight to be delayed after having to make a detour to Singapore due to the weather conditions. On this day in 2009, the Braun GP team was formed. In a statement, it was confirmed that Ross Brawn was the new team owner and the cars would run Mercedes engines for the 2009 season. Of course, the team went on to be purchased by Mercedes less than a year later. Jenson Button and Rubens Barrichello were confirmed as drivers, despite speculation that Bruno Senna would take fellow Brazilian Barrichello's seat. The team also showed pictures of the car on track at Silverstone with its striking white and fluorescent yellow livery. 23 days after being formed, the team went on to take a 1-2 result in the season-opening Australian Grand Prix, and eventually clinched both the 2009 drivers and constructors titles. and we end this series of the podcast with, drumroll please, Bernie Eccleston. Alright, that's quite enough. On this day in 2004, Bernie said that he'd like there to be 20 races on the calendar, saying that he saw no reason not to expand the schedule. He argued that doing more races and less testing would be more cost-effective for the teams. Bernie said this on his arrival to Melbourne, where he was attending the Australian Grand Prix for the first time in 6 years. And now a direct quote from the article, which says, "He accompanied his beautiful lady wife Slavica to the Albert Park circuit last night and said he wanted to give her a first visit to the land down under." I don't know if that was supposed to be a euphemism or not, but either way, I've got to stop because I've got a little bit of sick in my throat. So there you have it, that's your lot for this series of F1 Rewind. I hope you've enjoyed listening as much as I've enjoyed putting it together. And fear not, the podcast will return later in the year with even more tales from the F1 treasure troves. Thank you for listening, and I will see you again soon. Goodbye.